Welcome back, Raw Thoughts listeners, to another episode with me, Mackenzie Tiggs. I want to invite you, July, to ignite your life. One of our past guests, Matt Schneider, was actually on and talked about a little bit about his background, what that looks like, and then kind of leading your life into being surrounded by the people that want to invest in you and build you. And today I'm so excited that I get to actually have one of the speakers that are going to be at that event talking with us. So in the show notes, you can find all about the event, what we're doing, what he is doing, be able to come along with us in just igniting your own life, taking it to that next step and really honing into growth. So all of the information is in there. If you do end up signing up, please message me because we can actually get you on the same river raft. So that's super fun. Today I have Megan McCaleb, and she has, you know, written books. She has just a soul of fire, and I'm so excited to have her here and speak with us, kind of what, you know, has, what her life has been. So Megan, welcome.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, where to begin with what life has been?
Yeah.
It's been an adventurous journey.
Which is fun.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
You, right?
It definitely. Yep. It shapes us. You know that saying that people are always like, I mean, it's really commonly has a negative thing about like, your story does not define you. And whenever I think of that, I'm like, you know, I feel like what you take with your story and the character that we can build from it and refine ourselves because of it. Like, I much prefer seeing how someone overcomes and does good in the world. And I don't think it's a shameful thing that people are like, oh, because this bad thing happened to me. Like, I mean, I get why people are like, it doesn't define you. But I think of my journey and the things that I have overcome. And I'm like, I like to share those things because that shows strength of character, really, if you can still kind of be a good human despite the challenges and stuff. So anyway,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, just hearing you through, you know, the last couple months, is that's not defining you, but it is part of you.
Oh, for sure.
And I think that for the listeners is like, we can't just erase that part of our life. We're not defined, you know, we're not still stuck in that part of our life.
Yeah,
but it doesn't go away.
No,
it's what we do with it that totally matters, and how we get ourselves out of that.
Yeah. And in fact, making it, trying to make it go away was really one of the hardest seasons of my life, when people, which we'll talk about, like, or maybe I'll just jump right into it. Yeah. Like when I had my experience of an unplanned pregnancy as a high school, we'll just go right into it, folks.
Yeah.
As a senior in high school and also a Mormon girl at the time, and all the like concern of what was happening, after it all happened, I was ushered quickly through this repentance process and really encouraged to not talk about it again and to not bring shame on the situation and myself and the judgment and my family. And so I really did internalize that and close up like a vault when I shouldn't have had to do that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's really powerful when we keep it there, but not as a negative thing, and certainly not staying in a space of like victimhood and the woe is me and stuff, but really being empowered by like, okay, this was a hand that I was dealt, and how did I choose to play it? Yeah. And help other people, because the more I share, the more it brings relief to other people who are hungry to share.
Yeah. Well, and it really, you know, especially with this podcast, is you being willing to share what you have gone through is helping other people that are in those positions, or maybe it sparks something with them. They're like, oh, I don't have to be ashamed by this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm not surrounded by the right people, or maybe I just haven't figured out how I need to share about this.
Yeah.
But just erasing it still doesn't take it away.
No, it's still something we think about a lot. And what a peculiar thing that shame is, because we're so often like worried, or and rightfully so, some people that have been truly been shunned by family, friends, religious groups, like whatever, things that are really important in their lives, and yet no one is without challenges and trials and making what people would identify as mistakes. Sometimes we can mm-hmm. say, oh yeah, that was a dumb choice. And yet we've gathered more information of things that we want to do or don't want to do. And shame just can become such a bizarre vacuum of, it's like not even a real space because we all have different things. And it's just such a fascinating thing to me that so many people feel like they can't share because there's going to be shame. And yet the people who are putting shame there are probably trying to just deflect from something they feel shame about and whatever that other situation yeah. is. And I'm like, if everyone would just open up and be like, oh man, that must have been really hard. And this was something that was really hard for me. Let's look for grace and move forward together instead of pointing fingers yeah. of like who did the worst thing and why it was terrible and be critical of each other and ourselves.
Yeah, all that judgmental space. So tell us a little bit about what that was like, being a Mormon, pregnant, teen. Like, what was that journey?
It was not ideal. It was really scary because I was so worried about being like disappointing people was the biggest thing. I was worried that I would disappoint my family. And I chose to hide the pregnancy. So the only person that knew, this is back in 1999, the only person who knew I was pregnant was my boyfriend who got me pregnant. And he wanted to tell people, he's like, I think we should get some help. And I was like, no. I was like, I was so fearful of letting people down. And I just wanted to get through it myself. And so there was, it was not a pleasant situation. I hid from my family. I worked multiple full-time jobs as soon as I graduated so I could hide from anyone who knew me very well and all the way up until I delivered. And what's so weird is like, I wish that I would have just known that there was love to be given to the situation, but I didn't want someone to somehow influence my journey. So the one big blessing that came from that, like, I mean, there's many, but a huge one was I really felt like it was between me. And at the time, I really believed in my heavenly father, my God figure. I was like, this is between me and him. And he's going to somehow get me through this. And I'm going to trust that this is part of my personal journey. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, in 1999, the clothes were baggy and stuff. So as my belly started to grow, I was able to hide it under my work uniforms and whatever. But it was a really bizarre, disconnected time because I hid away from people. And that's very unlike me.
Yeah. How did you at some point tell your parents, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm delivering this baby.
Well, my parents were out of town when I went into labor. I was living at home, still sharing a room with my older sister. I was sleeping on the top bunk, actually, still all the way up till I went into labor. I hoisted my body out of the bed. And after several hours of just painful labor, I told my sister I needed her to take me to the hospital. And she was the first person I told. She's like, what's going on? I'm like, I'm having a baby. And she's like, what? Almost fell down the stairs. And so she got me to the hospital. And then one by one, she let family members know. And they were all just shocked. I mean, they knew that something was off. Like, mm-hmm. they knew I wasn't being my usual charismatic, happy-go-lucky self all summer. And my parents were hustling home from a vacation they were on. And they were like, oh my gosh, what could it possibly be? Is she on drugs? Is she doing, you know, they had no idea. I'd literally hidden from them as much as I possibly could. And so, yeah, one at a time, my family was notified. I'm the youngest of six in a blended home. They were all notified. And I was lucky enough to, like, have them express love. And they were like, why didn't you tell us? We love you. And I was like, I didn't know. I thought you were going to hate me. And, you know, by then I was starting to stumble into the adoption option, which I really hadn't processed as an option before that. But yeah, telling my parents, they were just so devastated that I did it alone, which I loved. And I am also devastated that I hear so many stories of people who did not have that people immediately went the other direction with disowning family members and terrible things that people say and do to make the situation much, much worse.
Yeah. How did you go about the route that you were going to adopt you put your baby up for adoption?
Yeah, I was sitting there in the hospital holding a full-term 7-pound, 2-ounce baby girl. And I was just kind of in another realm mentally, because I was like, I felt this like overwhelming love for this human. I was like, whoa, this is a tiny human. And she's been with me. She was also the only one with me this whole time. I would talk to her through my, you know, my whatever. I was by myself a lot. I'm like, I have this little human inside me. And so it actually just like really finally clicked when I was in the hospital. And the one of the nurses or whatever were just doing our routine, you know, checking vitals and whatever. And I was just like, I just remember feeling really zoned out and just being like, this is not my baby. What do I do? And like, she just casually was like, oh, so are you placing for adoption? Oh, and like, just like so casually. And the my boyfriend at the time, the birth father, I think he had mentioned it a couple times. And he also like wanted to keep the baby and get married and live in his parents' basement. I was like, no. But it like in that moment finally clicked. And I was like, wait. Oh, okay. Tell me more. And so while I was in the hospital, the social services brought me families to choose from. And 5 days later, she was placed into her home.
Holy kind of crazy. Shit.
I know. Yeah.
Like, you hid this pregnancy. Mm-hmm. You're in the hospital having this baby. You didn't plan for, one, the pregnancy. You didn't even plan for, like, the after, right? You hadn't bought clothes. You hadn't bought...
Mm-mm.
And you were just like, all right, I don't know what I'm going to do, but it'll come to me.
I really did. I don't know how I had the wherewithal. I mean, really, because I was like, this was magical. And then all the things that lined up with the family that I chose, they had recently been selected for a baby girl. And then that mom chose to keep the baby. And so they were like, oh, and they even joked. They're like, the next time the baby already better be born. And they'd already had a room prepared for a baby girl.
Oh.
And so when I, you know, like all those things that line up, and I was like, oh, like, I mean, that's just like one little thing, but there's just such a huge list of all the things that were like, and then this and this and this, all these little perfect things that I'm like, this had to be, this was meant to be. And I felt so honored that I got to be a vessel for a human baby, you know, for this woman who couldn't have her own children, and they were ready for her, and they got the call, and like they were just ready to go. And so it's like, there's no denying to me that like, that's like how we serve each other, especially in our darkest moment.
Wow. I literally have chills of you talking about this, because these are the things that you can't plan for.
Right.
And even if you had, it wouldn't have meant what it means to you now.
Yeah.
You know, like all of those things aligning, and the universe and God and whatever power you want to put within that.
Yeah.
That was your journey in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was their journey in life.
Totally. I mean, it's fascinating. And that's one of the things where I obviously get fired up about things in this world. There's things that I think are unjust and unfair and unfathomable that people do to each other. And I just think like, why is it so, the first thing that we go to is shame and judgment and anger and rage and making people feel like there has to be a right and a wrong instead of love. Like, the more something is a struggle, the more I'm like, ooh, how do we put love on this? Because I got to make that choice. So getting through all of that was really difficult, but I got to make the choice. It's a permanent decision that mm-hmm. I made. And I live with that every single day. Now, if I had been forced, like some other girls in churches, including the church I was in, they would get shipped off to a home to be, you know, so the family didn't have shame on them. And so no one knew this was happening. And they would be pressured in many cases to place their baby for adoption, even if they didn't want to. And that's not okay either. And so for me, it was this really, you know, I'm kind of grateful at such a young age to have this very profound experience of seeing why it's so important that we get to make our own choices. And I hope that we all, you know, choose to learn from our choices so that we can do our very best mm-hmm. as we continue to live on this planet, and to recognize how what other people are doing is really none of our business. And we really should just be like, man, that must be a challenge. I love you. I support you.
Yeah.
We take way too much responsibility for other people's stuff and it makes it worse.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
Or like projecting our opinions in of, you know, do this or this or this. And it's hard because sometimes people ask us, right, for that advice because they don't know their own personal choice. And so they are reaching out to people around them and saying like, well, what do I do?
Yeah.
It's well, like, yeah. Whatever the fuck you want to do.
I know. That's where the magic of my yes and world came in. It was years later. And then I started really putting that together because I was like, if you don't know what you want to do, you absolutely ask all the questions you want and listen to the options and then sit with it to go, ooh, which feels right to me? I kind of like this part from this person over here. And yet I like this part from this over here. And then you get to cherry pick the parts that like help influence your decision instead of feeling like it has to still be just this one specific way.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was, let me back up. Did you have an open adoption? Do you still know your daughter? What does that look like?
So mine was a semi-open adoption. That was the more popular option at the time, which meant there was correspondence once a year, guaranteed for the first 5 years. And then they chose to continue to send letters and little gifts and stuff once a year around her birthday. And so, yeah, and she always knew she was adopted. And we not only have stayed in touch, but we reunited in person right before her senior year in 2016. And she's now married, I have a biological grandchild who's almost one. Oh, they live here in town now, and so do her parents, who also moved to live here. So we're all still navigating the things, you know? It's just a different season. And that's been awesome, too, to, like, really open up about, like, what are the difficulties on all sides? Because we are really close. I talk to her almost every day, either a meme for the day or we're sending, you know, the little notes or voice messages and stuff. And it's pretty amazing because it hasn't been easy. And it's been awesome to, like, recognize that each of us still have hurt feelings sometimes and things that we need to talk about because it's still a traumatic experience. And then we just get to be empowered with, like, what do we get to do with it? So it's pretty awesome to see it continue to evolve.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, it's each person's experience over this one, you know, kind of epicenter.
Yeah.
Like, you have your own perspective and feelings of this situation, and so does your daughter, and so do those parents. And how do you, like you said, navigate through life?
Mm-hmm.
That is a true journey of figuring out what do we do?
Yeah.
And you guys all get to make that decision together.
Yeah. I will say that the talking about it is paramount because we can all kind of tell if there's a little moment of like, oh, and like sometimes we maybe accidentally say the wrong thing. And actually it was really hard, you know, because I really respect the boundary of those are her parents. Mm-hmm. I was not equipped and ready for it. And I genuinely was like, I love this offspring so dearly that I want her to have the very best. And then, like, even when we reunited and there was some stuff on social media and I published my book and I actually had a news segment here in town and people really started referring to me as her mom and my daughter and whatever. And I was like, ooh, we got to be careful here because Leanne's her mom. And really recognizing, like, we just need to talk about it. And it's not always fun to hear feedback about stuff. And yet that's where the healing comes from. And my daughter, you know, like my birth daughter, I was like, technically she's my birth daughter, which is kind of a weird term, but, you know, she's been very open and hopefully she's okay with me saying this, but she's been very open about like her own journey of going in for counseling at different times and working through some of her challenges and being like, this isn't mean I'm mad at you for placing me for adoption. I very much feel like this is the right place. And I realize I also have some issues because it was still a trauma.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's amazing that she's getting the help and guidance at a very young age instead of holding on to it for decades and feeling like this is just the way that we have to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, and also putting that like judgment on you of like, well, why did my mom put me up for adoption?
Right.
What, she didn't want me. And all of the things that come through that, even when you have supportive parents around you, that still happens,
you know?
And for her to say like, I love you and you are my birth mom, right? But like, I, for myself, need to figure out this journey for me.
Totally.
And it's it has nothing really, honestly, to do with you. It comes with her circumstances. But for her to recognize and say, I don't want to put shame on her. I want to learn how I need to deal with this and what I need to do to grow.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
And I want that for everyone so bad.
Yeah.
Whenever I see people hurting, especially if they're like, people are blinded and not even realizing that like they're acting out of a place of hurt and anguish and stuff, and like talking and using resources and stuff is so important and scary, because then once you start doing the work, it's also a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
And it never ends.
No. I mean, I, you know, have had to put myself back into therapy for childhood trauma, you know, and it's working through that. And what does that look like? And all of those dynamics. And, you know, I'm now realizing, you know, I'm like, ooh, I blocked that out of my life. Like, ooh, we need to like work on that, you know, and it's hard. And it's, you know, I do have great relationships with all of my people and my family. And, you know, it's nothing against them.
Yes.
It's nothing against what they did. It's now, how do I deal with this?
Yes.
The action is done.
Yep.
And they did that action for whatever reason in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get to place that judgment on what they did because of me.
Yeah. And that's the key. Like, I know that's where a lot of defense comes up from people. I've gone in and out of therapy for various things over the years, because I'm like, oh, okay, I feel like I'm pretty good on this thing. Oh, and then there's this thing. And now there's this thing. And like talking to my own family about it too, I do kind of feel like I'm just like this tornado of emotions and the wrecking ball of just chaos. And because I'm just so loud about stuff, because I don't want to settle. And it has kind of rubbed some family members the wrong way, yet my intentions are on me finding the healthy stuff. And I'm not trying to diss on anyone. I love my family. I feel really grateful for my life, you know, and so it is interesting too that I'm always kind of like, well, if something is rubbing someone the wrong way when someone is seeking help, take a moment to be like, why is this rubbing me the wrong way? Why am I taking offense to it? You know, it's just like this domino effect of things. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, you know, you've had this struggle, you've kind of worked through it. Where has that brought you? You know, you talk about it still in your life, what that looks like, but you also brought up the yes and.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's interesting is because after that many years of being like, I better not talk about this. I'm not supposed to talk about it. It means I didn't move on if I talk about this, all those things. I just find that it's the sort of delightful cycle of just helping me to check myself and see where I am and how can I be more helpful to other people. And having the yes and, like, I worked in corporate when I learned improv, and that was a blessing in its own right, because I was in banking, retail banking, where there's, as you guessed it, like most industries, it was very male dominated. And I was always an emotional person, and very, you know, just the way I functioned was not maybe like a normal suit wearing business person. And so kind of trying to figure out how to use all these pieces as an advantage in the workplace to be like, we are all human beings who are dealing with different things, and telling people to check their personal life at the door while they work is not reasonable. And people function better if they feel like they get to be a human being and get sent home maybe if they need to because their dog died that morning. Like, I think of real experiences I had as a manager, and I'd kind of get penalized by my management if I was too human, and I hated that. And so then improv came into my life, and I learned about yes and I learned how to use that as an acceptance of what is. It's an acknowledgement. It doesn't mean I have to agree. It just means, oh, okay, that's the thing. And then and lets me take action with it, right? And build and grow, see what's possible. What information do I need to collect? And so I always had the undercurrent of my personal story, what I was trying to do for my personal persona or professional persona. And then, and realizing like how much, like none of it matters unless we are feeling accepted in ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so that's ultimately what it comes back to. I love sharing the stories. I love blending them all together. The professional stuff, because I was a high achieving, like Hawaii trip award winning branch manager, because I had people who loved working with me because I treated them like the amazing people they were. And then the story, you know, of how I wanted to be a good person was just always under there, of making everyone proud and making myself proud. And so with all this cycle, I was like, very long answer to, it's all just part of this reciprocal little space where I get to keep checking in and revisit where I can work on some things for myself and how do I be a better contributor to the world around me.
Yeah. I'm also curious, you talked about you going from this corporate banking to then improv to then like, what was that transition?
It wasn't quick enough, I'll tell you that. For one of the rules being in improv is to make bold choices, which I do make bold choices, I will say, just sometimes not as quickly as I could. I saw immediately when I was playing in that space of performance how much those tools and the like, why comedy works on stage, how to be a good scene partner, how to really be part of what's going on, and how it was affecting me as a bank manager in a good way. And I would look around me and see how much stuff was so rigid and antiquated and things that like, just, we do these things because we do these things. And I just didn't want to accept that. So I started just teaching workshops and having fun on the side while I was still doing the corporate stuff. And eventually it just sort of branched out. And I was like, there's more people that need this. We need to be able to feel human, feel like kids again in like the positive way, because also sometimes bringing up childhood stuff, whatever, that's a whole thing. I'm like, I should be a licensed psychologist and accidentally triggering people in a workshop, but it's simple tools. That's really what it is. It's simple tools, a little bit of playful spirit, spark the creativity, let people have fun in the workplace.
Yeah.
So they want to stay in your workplace. Yeah. It's a huge key for retention, of keeping people happy and engaged. And I just knew I had to take what I knew from business and do what I could with it, with the play space.
Tell us a little bit about like what improv actually is.
Yeah. Well, commonly it's associated with the comedy art form. So usually in like theater and in comedy, it's a fast paced, no script, it's off the cuff, usually ends up being funny. Where people are just rapid fire playing together, right? And the key is that they're building with whatever is presented. It's commonly driven by whatever the audience suggests in the moment. It's like, okay, where do you wish you could go for vacation? And they're like, Hawaii. Okay, great. So your suggestion's Hawaii. Well, then the scene, our job as the players is to create something magical and probably unexpected with it. They might assume we're going to just suddenly be vacationing in Hawaii, whereas it may actually be that you're in the tattoo shop and you're getting Hawaii tattooed on your butt cheek and whatever. So like, it's fun to take what you're suggested and then see what else you can do with it. Stretch the creativity. So improv is a space really to empower people to feel like you don't have to know the end result. You just start going.
Yeah. That is powerful just in that one statement.
Yeah.
Like, you can take that one statement and put that into people's lives.
Yeah.
It's like, stretch where you're wanting to be. Mm-hmm. And you have all of those possibilities.
Yeah.
To where you want to go.
And commonly, the thing that I get, like the biggest myth I want to always bust, is that people don't have to be funny to do improv. Like, a lot of times people go, oh, you do improv? Oh, my husband would love to come to your workshop, or my kid would love that, or whatever, because they're already making assumptions. And usually the person that's telling me someone else needs it probably could benefit from it the most, because we're all improvising every day. Nobody has like a script that's going to for sure work every minute of every day. And it's really fun to see when you can just implement such simple tools. I mean, it's two words. You start with that yes, and it's two words that can literally, if you let it, change the way you move about your life. Yeah. And especially when it's hard, that's why it matters the most. I mean, yeah, obviously that's the big thing. We just get in our little way of doing things and don't want to rock the boat, when really there's a nice way to address things that are hard and feel like you're being productive.
Yeah. Give us a couple examples of that statement, yes and. What does that look like when you break it down? Because I think people would, yes and what?
You know? Okay. Do you want to do a demonstration with me? Okay. So let's do a counterpoint of it first to show why yes and matters. So we're going to do a little exercise. And we'll start with yeah, but, which is the arch nemesis of yes, and people often yeah, but, and they don't realize it. So let's first do that just for a few back and forth. So I want you to tell me something that you love?
I love to go hiking.
Yeah, but you might get a sunburn if it's hot out.
Yeah, but you're in nature.
Yeah, but if you step in a bush, you might either scratch your leg or get itchy.
Yeah, but it's fresh air outside.
Yeah, but sometimes you might feel short of breath if you're out of shape.
Yeah, but that means I need to do it more.
Yeah, but who has time?
Yeah, but why don't we make some time?
Okay. All right, so let's pause there. So that obviously, and I'm sure listeners would agree, it feels like we're getting nowhere. Mm-hmm. You're having to be on the defense. Dude, I was just talking about going on a hike. Why do you have to be a buzzkill? Yeah, but is where dreams go to die. So then if we flip the script, and now I want you to tell me another thing that you love, and now we're going to use yes and see where it takes us.
Oh, another thing I like. I really love reading.
Yes, and it's so fun to see how characters can develop.
Yes, and I love just the restful quietness.
Yes, and it reminds me of how nice it is, especially with like a warm cup of coffee on a rainy day.
Yes, and I can just get lost in a story.
Yes, and it reminds me that there is so much more than just like the noises in my own head.
Yes, and you get to learn from all of these other people and what their stories are.
Yes, and it makes me feel empowered to share my story. Okay,
yes.
So there, yeah, so there's, it's such a simple change, and yet it changes the energy of it. Like, how did it feel for you to be told yeah, but versus yes, and from things you like?
Well, like you said, you put that defense up. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm trying to argue with you of like telling you, you know, getting you to my side of like,
right,
no, let's go outside. Like, I have to pull you in. Instead of yes and is like, oh, come with me. Like, oh, yeah. Maybe even if you don't want to come with me, like, thank you for supporting me.
Exactly. That's the biggest thing is like people feel like, oh, if I say yes to that, then it means I condone whatever they're doing and I disagree. And it's like, well, not really. Like it could help you set boundaries, actually, if you let it. And just use yes to go, yes, that's a thing. And as much as I want to be valued and like I want to like my own things, I need to honor that to other people. Yes, I hear you. And it's a great thing to diffuse where there is disagreement and tension. Do I have time to give you a little mm-hmm. example? So when I was working in banking and I was learning these tools, I had to often deal with overdraft customers and I could not stand that. But a lot of times they would beat me to like, before I even got to the phone calls, they'd come raging into the branch. And I remember one day that a guy came in and he was just like red faced and yelling and he was so mad because his account was overdrawn. And he was like, oh, your bank is so stupid and the fees are outrageous. And my wife did this. And he was just like, blame, 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 blame. And he was so mad. And so I let him like rip for a minute. And then I just said, yes, I hear you. Your account is overdrawn. I was like, I wasn't agreeing with him, but he was not expecting to hear a yes. He was waiting for me to have that defense. And I was like, in that moment, like literally saying it out loud, I was like, oh my gosh, this is everything. Because then my and came a moment later. Like the yes was, okay, let's just look at what we're dealing with. And then he was not like immediately like, well, let's see what you did wrong, you dumb dumb. Because usually a lot of times people know if they've kind of done something wrong too. Mm-hmm. And so it just adds insult to injury. And so saying that gave him a moment to catch his breath. It like let me get steady. And then I was like, all right, well, let's look and see what happened. And I, guess what? I couldn't always reverse overdraft fees. I wasn't allowed to. And I could still let people leave those challenging situations because they were heard. And then we looked at where was the problem. There's always something got missed in the register. And then we move forward. And so when we really use those, when it's hard, like it's easy to say yes if we like something and we agree. But if you can say yes, interesting, tell me more mm-hmm. and build, like that's the game changer.
Well, and like you said, it just allows for them that space.
Yeah.
Like you're not directly in defense mode or putting up these walls and being like, hey, I am not the person that you need to be yelling at, blah, blah, blah. Right. You know, it just heightens the situation.
Yeah.
Where you say, you know what? I heard you.
Mm-hmm.
I did listen to that.
Yeah.
And now let's figure out how we're going to make this better.
Yeah.
Or what's our next step?
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that is powerful, especially, you know, people in the workplace, people having, I mean, we communicate with people all the time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that we're going to agree with people mm-hmm. all the time.
Totally.
And, you know, I think it also is a great reminder when, you know, people are coming at us. It's like, ooh, okay, what's actually happening in your life?
Yeah.
What is going on?
Honestly, yeah.
That, like, I'm getting projected on.
Yes.
And I'm not upset about that, but it's like, let's take a pause, and how I react to you can change the entire situation.
100%. I mean, it really is like, I know the term is thrown around a lot, but I'm like, it is like radical acceptance. I love that I have it in my life. Sometimes I'm like, because I know I have to use it. And it's especially when like something, there's some sort of turmoil or something I just can't even wrap my head around because it's so bizarre or such a weird opinion or such a horrible thing that someone has done to someone else. Because there's people that are just, whatever, that's a whole other podcast. But when I'm allowing myself to go, yes, that's a real thing. I can only make a difference if I can get into that situation and understand more. Mm-hmm. And the only way we can approach really like volatile situations or people who are like really ramped up about something is giving them that moment of like, yes, I genuinely hear you. I'm listening to you. And it doesn't mean I agree with you. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to say that part. You know, you just know I'm stepping into this with way more power than trying to put up my dukes, because then everybody, it's like trying to take a kid's toy away when they're already mad. They're going to cling so tight and shake. And adults do that with their opinions left and right. And you can soften that with yes and.
Yeah. And I love it because it is that openness, mm-hmm. not only of you, but to learning from other people. Yeah. And I mean, this podcast, I love just having that space for people to share, and I think my genuine curiosity of how do people live our, you know, their lives, because it's different than mine, and I yeah. can't expect it to be the same because not all the variables are the same,
right?
You know, there's so many different things that do sculpt us, you know, and I think that's a better word than defining us, is mm-hmm. like those situations sculpt us
yeah.
to who we are and who we're wanting to become. And just you saying that is like, oh, there's so much like openness to that.
Yeah. And that there's more. And I know a lot of the times I love listening to your podcast and watching the clips and stuff. And there's so much around the space of suicide prevention. And I got to speak, yes, and at a huge youth thing at the Ford Idaho Center a while back. And I saw how powerful it is in that moment too. And I'm like, I definitely don't know have time to get into certain things, but there's been some very down moments in my life where if I hadn't had those words too, it's like I may not be here. And I recognize that when people are kind of on the brink, knowing from where I've been, where I'm like, I'm in such a dark place, I don't know how to reach out. Mm-hmm. And I luckily knew those words to, in my own mind, just go, yes, I'm having a really hard moment. And sometimes those moments actually would bleed into months, days, years, because of other life challenges that came up, right? And I just know that like there's so much hard energy in the world right now, and it is crushing to our souls. And so I find that that is just something that, I mean, I get inspired, and I'm like, when I'm listening for like, we need tools, we need people to feel like they can reach out. And I also really feel strongly about helping people have a tool they can use for themselves when, if they're anything like me, when I've been at my worst point, there was no way I would have reached out. I just was so full of shame. Mm-hmm. But I knew in my mind, crying under my freaking desk in my home office, I remember going out loud, yes, oh, this is so hard. And I talked myself through it. Like maybe I cuckoo mongo. Like I'm like, maybe I'm a psycho. I don't know. But I was so present with myself with yes and that I was like, this hurts so bad. And then I would think about other things that have happened that have been positive, and I'm like, somehow I can get to the next moment. And I would just let the feelings be there. And so it's so much more, it's so much more than even just those surfacey things. It is such a huge desire of mine for people to feel like they are accepted. And sometimes we have to start with ourselves if we don't feel like we fit in the world and the way that we're supposed to be. I feel so grateful to have those words to go, yes, I was not a mistake to have been born on this planet. I have things that are good and bad and challenging, and to keep in ready position, you know, to move with that yes acceptance and just kind of hang on when I didn't want to hang on, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really know where I'm going with that other than I was like, ugh, it's so deeply rooted in me.
It is. And it, we do have time to maybe deep dive into it a little bit more of, you know, we do talk a lot on this podcast, and there's been people on this podcast that have shared with me those situations of literally having a gun in their hand in those pivotal moments, you know, yeah. And like you said, being in those situations of darkness and heaviness, and that is when people don't typically reach out,
right?
Right? They feel the most alone. Yeah. They feel like nobody else is going to understand what I'm going through.
Yeah.
It sounds like you had multiple situations like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, because I thought my adoption story would be my hardest challenge in life, honestly. I was like, oh, good. This is all front loaded. It's going to be smooth sailing. And then I felt really excited to learn about improv at a young age, too, in my early 20s. And then the challenges got so much more challenging, and challenging marriage that I had been in, and a lot of different things just with that dynamic of not realizing, you know, things that happened even in my church life, times that I had gone to try to get help and guidance. And instead of being like leaving the situation with like, you are loved, it was like, you sinner, you know? So there's a lot of different things that I felt like I was failing as a Mormon. And I was a member of the church till not that long ago. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of different things, but I think what the most important thing is that even without knowing every single detail, it's like, I just am so aware that other people are just, they're dealing with whatever they're having thrown at them. And I love to be able to reach out. And I also really like to know that when I can't actually reach out, that I'm empowered with a tool that I can personally use all by myself.
Yeah.
And that's really been like a huge saving grace of having just like, you gotta take a moment to breathe. And like some of those things that sound super trivial, but they really actually do help. And it all kind of comes full circle. Like mental wellness in general would not be such a huge issue if we were not working so hard as a society to block each other from being individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, it really comes down to, I've had this come up multiple times just within this week of like societal labels. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, strip the labels.
Yeah.
Like, who are you?
Yes.
You know, and totally. There's so many times, you know, even teaching this to people is, you know, I understand when people say, oh, we need to reach out and we need to, you know, ask people, how are they actually doing?
Yeah.
No, it's us that we need to be actually truthful.
Yeah.
It starts with us, mm-hmm. of saying, no, I'm actually not doing okay.
Yeah.
Before it gets to those super dark, heavy, yes. moments. And you're like, I actually don't have any tools. I don't know what to do. And then
right.
usually it is the easier route to commit suicide.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I just want this to be done.
Right.
I want to get away from this. They don't yeah. see the positive. And I think, I mean, just learning that you have used those two words to pick you up
mm-hmm.
out of the darkness is so inspiring.
Thank you. It's... I'm just here to say it works.
Which is really, amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize how much I'd been in survival mode for a long time. And I didn't realize how bad some things were until I realized how bad some things were. And I don't necessarily want to trash on some details of stuff, but I got myself out of that situation when I still had four very young children and self-employed and going to that single mom life, and recognizing how much people were just like, I was only allowed to be that happy person. Like they saw me as kooky Megan, and I'm always the optimist and always the whatever. And I was like, I didn't feel like I had the room to be an emotional person either. And so it was really kind of an interesting journey to go, okay, I am that. I'm also this. Mm-hmm. And to really figure out how to come out of the darkness was like, it was just a lot. And it was a long period of time. And like just knowing that it's okay. That we have to kind of keep revisiting it too. And it's not really like a remedy that like, I don't think I'll ever probably get like to where I just am smooth sailing the rest of my life.
That's
no one,
not life.
None of us will, right?
No.
Yeah. And I just feel like I don't really care about what people think of me anymore, which is a really nice place to be. There's the power of sharing your true story is people are going to judge no matter what. So you may as well be part of the story sharing.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I tell, you know, the listeners, you might as well be raw, right? You might as well be real, authentic, and willing to share. Yeah. And that is what you are, you know, able to say, hey, this is a part of me and I'm willing to share this because I didn't have somebody that was there. I didn't have a script to go by. I didn't have these tools or resources. I learned them, but I'm also willing to share them with you.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited. Okay. Tell us, we're going to end on a little positive note.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us what you are kind of, maybe you're sharing, yes, and, but you're speaking at Ignite Your Life.
Yeah, I get to kick it off. So yeah. I'm emceeing and I'm doing a little segment right at the beginning teaching that yes and principle so that everybody can wrap their heads around, like, how are we going to be really full participants in this experience? And so I'm really excited. And it plays off of one of my favorite roles. Like, I love being on stage and speaking. And I genuinely love, one of the rules of improv is making each other look good, as I've told you about before. But it being able to kick it off and really show, like, these amazing speakers that were all part of this experience together, you get to show up and we're going to see it all. We're probably going to see lots of people having their moments of, like, oh crap, and crying and whatever. And that's where the good stuff is. So I'm very excited to have the opportunity to kick it all off and warm everybody up with that improv mindset and get them all ready to play and activate all that goodness.
I'm so excited. Any parting thoughts or, you know, things that you want to share with the listeners?
Ooh, just to sit with your story and think about, like, I know a lot of my clients, not only when I teach improv, but I teach a lot of public speaking, well, with improv influence, obviously. Just anyone that is listening, if you're feeling like certain parts of your story, like, just which parts really have impacted you, because I guarantee that even if you share with, like, your hairdresser or a friend or a coworker or somebody, if you get to share a little bit of that, like, really sensitive space, there's a lot of freedom and, like, the burden begins to lift really immediately when you can just see that it's, like, not as big of a deal in a negative way as we've made it. So if anyone's listening and they're hearing in their own minds, like, a certain story that they've connected to something negative, that there's someone else out there that really will benefit from you sharing. And that one person might be you that benefits. So why not just sit with that and feel like the reason it's coming up is probably for a good reason that you need to do something with it.
Yeah, definitely addressing it. And I love that you said, why not? You know, why not go to therapy? Why not speak your story?
Totally.
Why not change your job? Whatever that is, you know, I literally have that tattooed on the middle of my finger because it is such a, also, you know, impactful thing of, like, why are we not doing what we want to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much power in that.
Yes.
So, listeners, thank you for coming along with learning more about Megan's journey. We didn't even tap into what she does with Ovation and speaking and guiding all those things. But guess what? This podcast is truly learning about who they are.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things that she gets to do, you get to find on LinkedIn. You get to find on her website. You get to find all of those social places. I just really am so thankful of your vulnerability and coming on and sharing with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, listeners, all of her information along with Ignite Your Life is going to be in the show notes. So if you are ready to take that phrase, yes, and truly change your life and be able to take that personally and want to do that, I invite you to coming along with the experience, getting to be around the people that will help you truly change your life. But guess what? It has to be you that is willing to do that. So thank you again. I will talk to you guys soon, guys. Bye. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Raw Thoughts Podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could follow, like, subscribe, and share with anybody that you think would be interested in this. You could also head over to my website at rawthoughtspodcast.com and see any other guests that have been on the episodes. You could also go over to Instagram and follow at rawthoughts.podcast. I would really appreciate it, and always send me a message if you're interested in being a guest or any feedback.